greatest station ever. Locally grown radio 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
I'm Steve Kathan. There's a new six-point safety plan from the freight rail line Norfolk Southern, formed after the preliminary report on the toxic train wreck in Ohio. It calls for more temperature detectors on tracks and others to analyze vibrations. CBS's Roxana Saberi.
These pledges fall short of what the Biden administration has called for, like a faster braking system and more notification to communities about hazardous materials that might be coming through their areas. And it wants railroads to step up inspections by people, not just to upgrade their equipment.
It got ugly last night in Atlanta at a protest over a planned police training ground.
Authorities say everything was fine until a group of about 100 demonstrators peel off, change into all black clothing, then launch a coordinated attack against officers, explains Atlanta Police Chief Darren Cheerbaum.
When you throw commercial-grade fireworks, when you throw Molotov cocktails, large rocks, a number of items at officers, your only intent is to harm.
The upside, explains the chief.
We were very fortunate because of the quick actions of the commanders on scene. No police officers were injured.
Officers were actually able to call in backup and then go arrest nearly three dozen people who will be facing several charges. Michelle Wright for CBS News, Atlanta.
The FBI is offering a $50,000 reward for the return of four Americans who were seized just over the Texas border in Mexico. CBS's Christina Ruffini.
Shortly after crossing the border, gunmen opened fire on the passengers in the vehicle. All four Americans were taken from the scene by the attackers. Their conditions are unknown. This particular part of Mexico is a level 4 do not travel, the highest level warning in the State Department's travel advisory system.
In Rochester, New York, one person died, several others were hurt in a crowd crush after a rap concert. Mayor Malik Evans says there's evidence people were panicked by untrue reports of gunfire.
What happened at this concert breaks my heart, and it is totally unacceptable. I want to be clear, we are nowhere near completing this investigation.
United Airlines says two of its planes set to depart Boston's Logan Airport made contact with each other near the gate area today. A wing struck a tail. No one hurt. CBS's Cammy McCormick tells us what we're learning today about the state of American education.
Teachers are leaving the classrooms in many states. Some are seeing an alarming trend where some left midterm. They cite stress and students' behavior, among other things. The number had flattened, but it is now seeing an upsurge. In some cases, turnover is at its highest point in 5 years.
And checking Wall Street right now, the Dow is up 125 points. NASDAQ up 114. This is CBS News.
Nobody should have to pay for one-size-fits-all insurance coverage. Liberty Mutual customizes your car and home insurance so you only pay for what you need. Liberty Mutual Insurance.
My ride smells just right, just right, just right, just right.
Y'all gotta try that for Breeze Car.
Just right, just right, just right, just right. Yeah. La, 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 la.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
With up to 40 days of consistent scent, all over Breeze Car clips right on your vent.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
Know my car's my happy place. Keep a smile on my face. When it smells just right, just right, just right.
Yeah.
Breathe happy for Breeze.
Meet Joe A.
Hi.
Joe B.
Hello.
And Joe C.
What's up?
Three everyday Joes perfecting their banking with Chase. Joe A is locking his lost debit card with the Chase mobile app. Joe B is cruising toward his new ride with AutoSave. And Joe C's Chase banker is helping him budget to go back to school. Tools that help protect? Support for what's next. One bank that puts you in control. Visit chase.com/checking. Chase, make more of what's yours.
Chase mobile app is available for select mobile devices. Messaging and data rates may apply. JPMorgan Chase Bank, N.A. member FDIC.
On March 13th, we honor the canine members of the police force and military for Canine Veterans Day. We remember those beloved pets who served their country and their veterans. This week's Pet of the Week is brought to you by Members Advantage Credit Union and Southwood County Humane Society. With Members Advantage Credit Union, free checking accounts are easy, simple, and yes, free. Open your free checking account today with locations in Wisconsin Rapids and Plover.
From the Civic Media News Desk, I'm Melissa Kay. Here's what you need to know. The Port Edwards Fire Department responded to the high school this weekend. They received a report of a strong smell of gas. Responders found a broken fitting on the roof because of the heavy snow. They were able to temporarily stop the gas leak. District personnel and We Energies were called to the school, and and repairs are being made to the home of the Blackhawks. No danger remains. The race for Wisconsin Supreme Court is already the most expensive in U.S. history, at close to $19 million and counting. That includes the money raised by the campaigns themselves and outside groups.
You know, money is there just to get the message out. And I want all of Wisconsin to hear exactly what I'm saying and exactly what Janet's saying.
That's Dan Kelly on Capital City Sunday. His opponent, Janet Protasiewicz, says outside money is the reality brought on by the U.S. Supreme Court Citizens United ruling. I'm Melissa Kay for Civic Media News.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Chance for mixed precipitation changing to all snow this afternoon, otherwise cloudy. Highs level off around 36, winds out of the northeast, 8 to 15 miles per hour. Overcast skies again tonight, chance of snow showers, lows dip down to about 23. Partly cloudy tomorrow, highs around 40. A dusting of snow today. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently it's 33.
A voice from Beaver Dam to Kenosha, WAUK 540 AM, always streaming at WAUK Radio.
Did you see the thing I said about smelting? I was like, excuse me, what?
There are some very particular traditions associated with smelting, are there not?
Like I said, I had some of those memories that were fond and some that were not so fond.
That sounds like an innuendo for sex. What are we talking about?
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time, this is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Welcome to the noon hour. Thank you for joining us on your lunch hour today on this Monday, March 6th. And we are very excited for our next topic. But first, just a reminder, there's only 29 days until the spring election. We are, as of tomorrow, 4 weeks away.
Super important.
In case those political ads have not reminded you yet. it is upon us. It is a sprint to the election. You can check out everything, all things voting on myvote.wi.gov. I checked this morning. You can see everything that's on your ballot. You can, if you haven't gotten your absentee ballot request in, you can do that. You can check your registration. You can still register to vote until March 15th online. All of your things you can get done there, but 4 weeks from tomorrow. So, topically, our guests this hour, or this segment, are helping other people who are living abroad still vote and vote in Wisconsin. And so our guests are both from Democrats Abroad. Annie Grawl is on the Wisconsin State team and is coming in from Barcelona, Spain. And Liz Blackburn is also Wisconsin Abroad team member, and she is calling from China. So what time is it there, ladies?
2 a.m. in Shanghai. Anything for Wisconsin.
And Annie?
7 p.m. here.
Wow. And it is noon here. Thank you for, especially Liz. This was, are you usually up this late or is it just special for us?
This is how we get out the vote. And we're big fans. You probably didn't know you had worldwide following, but here we are. Annie said, hey, let's reach out. I really like these guys.
Oh, well, we're so yeah, and it was true. Us. I think it was on Twitter that Annie and I got connected as far as Dems, Wisconsin Dems Abroad. And I said, come on the show. Let's talk about it, because I feel like we sometimes are navel gazers and just thinking about the people in Wisconsin, trying to get them to vote. But I think we lose sight of how many people are voting who are still registered to vote in Wisconsin, still legally allowed to vote in Wisconsin, and yet live in China or live in Spain or live all over the world. And so let's talk more, I guess, first, just what Democrats Abroad is and does.
Sure. So Democrats Abroad is one of the 57 state parties of the DNC. So the DNC actually includes all 50 states plus the six territories, and then Democrats Abroad. And we have 8 voting members who go to the Democratic Convention to vote for the candidate for president. And we hold our own global presidential primary every 4 years. So we're actually an official part of the Democratic Party. And
realize that it was like basically the same status as each state and the different territories. This is news to me.
Yep. And our number one mission is getting out the vote among overseas Americans, because all U.S. citizens have the right to vote, but a lot of people who live abroad don't know they have that right, or if they know they do, they don't know how to do it. So our mission is to help those people cast their vote every 4 years or every 2 years and make sure that they can exercise their right as citizens.
And so, because my first question becomes, when we think about, and this is all elections, this is not just presidential or midterms, like in local elections, obviously, like the one that's coming up. So as long as they're registered to vote at an address in Wisconsin, they can still vote for school boards, they can vote for mayor, they can vote for county boards and everything.
You want to take this part, Liz?
Oh, boy. Well, this is where it gets a little complicated.
Okay.
Wisconsin prides itself, if you look at the MOVE Act, which Annie will maybe touch on later, Military and Overseas Voter Act, on being super progressive and empowering to us abroad. They give us our ballots via fax or email or snail mail, as per the usual, and they think that speeds up time for us. But actually, there's a few little hurdles in between, like intending to return. Now, when you live abroad, you have to usually have a visa to live abroad, right? And so those get renewed, like in China, every year. And it might be in my mind that I want to return and I'm going to move back to Wisconsin this summer. I love summer in Wisconsin. I might be here or sitting in Paris and saying, hey, I'm good for a while. I don't know if I intend to return, or I might never return. I'm going to retire here. Well, that changes if you can vote on what? In Wisconsin, at the state and local level. It also potentially impacts taxes. That's another thing. It's a little different per person, but really that intent to return is something that is a big part of our work at Wisconsinites Abroad. So if you intend to return, like I do, you can vote in these state and local elections.
Interesting. So yeah, I would imagine that is a lot of what you as an organization do, is clarifying questions for people as they come up and say, I want to vote. Where do I fall of what I can vote in, how I get my information? And so is that a huge part of this for you, both of you?
Well, absolutely. And with that first question, how long do you intend to, you know, have this podcast, right? What's your 5-year plan? Think about that and answering that when you're filling out, do I want to register to vote against, say, this MAGA candidate who's an election denier? Kind of a big deal.
Yeah, absolutely. So what are some of the other challenges that we don't, as people who live here, don't necessarily think of as far as whether it's the United States or Wisconsin specifically as like obstacles to voting when you are living abroad?
So the thing about voting as a U.S. citizen from overseas, our right to vote is protected by a law that's called UOCAVA, and that was approved in 1986 and signed into law actually by President Reagan, and it covers the right to vote from abroad of U.S. overseas military, their family members, and all other private U.S. citizens who are living abroad. So federally, the right to vote is protected by this law. And then all 50 states have their own interpretation from there on down, because the states are who administer the elections. So as Democrats Abroad, we can help our members or any other overseas citizens who want to vote. We can help them to register to vote in federal elections. The problem is when they come to the state-specific questions. And that's why in 2020, we started to form these teams that are state-specific, because our volunteers were being asked to learn election laws for 50 different jurisdictions, basically. And it was just way too much for them to know. So now we have, for the most important swing states, and the decisive states like Florida, New York, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Ohio, we have state teams now. And we're helping our members to jump through all the hoops in the right order so that they can vote, because it's not easy. So one of the challenges that we have is getting our ballots back. The UOCAVA provisions were modified in 2009 by a second amendment that was called MOVE, the Military and Overseas Voter Empowerment Act. And that act provided for our ballots to be sent to us by email, because before that, they were sent to us by postal mail. And for somebody like Liz, who lives in China, where the mail is not necessarily always real reliable, it wasn't always possible to receive your ballot, yeah, fill it out, and get it back in time. Wisconsin is the state that requires all ballots to be returned by postal mail, which in 2020 during the pandemic was another really big challenge, yeah, because a lot of the mail systems weren't even working. So one of the things that we have to work around is getting our ballots back in time. The MOVE Act allows for our ballots to be sent to us by email if we request to have them sent by email, but we still have to stick them in an envelope and send them back by postal mail. In 2020, the U.S. legislature, or the Wisconsin legislature, passed a law saying that every voter had to return their ballot personally. You couldn't return anybody else's mm-hmm. ballot for you. That's ballot harvesting, right? So think about somebody who lives in Panama that has really bad mail service right now, and they have three people in the same house. They have to all send their ballots back separately. And if that involves using FedEx to ensure that your ballot's going to get back, that involves spending $50 per ballot to go back, because you can't even sit them and send them back in the same envelope because of ballot harvesting. So there's a lot of...
Well, you're not being able to see, unless you're watching the live stream, both Jane and I are like slack-jawed right now of like having to spend that much money just in order to vote.
It almost feels like they don't want people to be able to vote easily. It's just so odd.
It's like a poll tax.
100%. You know, it's exactly what it is. And in your February 2022 breakdown, where you asked, how long did you stand in that poll, you know, in that waiting line, waiting to vote on the 21st in that primary? We're waiting weeks. First, yeah, we have to get that ballot to drop. And in federal elections, that's 45 days before an election that it could drop via email, much longer if it's a mail request. And then it takes 5-6 weeks, if we're lucky, to get our mail back home, even if we use a consular pouch. In 2021, it cost me $63 to courier my, which is FedEx, DHL, what have you, UPS, to get my ballot to the primary election counters in District 1, where I vote in Wisconsin, $63. And then I used the fall for the general election, I went through the consulate. And not only, you know, did I get it in the very first day I got my ballot, the day it dropped, I believe, was September 24th, 45 days before that election. I went in that first Monday, dropped it to drop at the consulate. It still took 5 weeks to get to Wisconsin. Goes from a secure, like, steel pouch, they call it. It's a steel box with an American flag on it. It's pretty cool. And they send it directly in their secure consular pouch straight to the U.S., and then it gets delivered by the Postal Service to Joy, what have you. It takes forever. So are we looking at $63? Are we looking at 6 weeks? Maybe it doesn't get counted. Are we looking at Wisconsin legislatures who are looking to limit that time frame for military voters from 6 weeks to 4 weeks, et cetera? We got a lot on our plate.
You guys have a lot on your plate. And so we have to take a break right now, but we're going to keep you both through the commercial, because I still want to hear what those of us living here can do to make your jobs a little bit easier. We're talking to Annie Grawl and Liz Blackborn, who are both from Democrats Abroad, one in China, one in Spain. Stick with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
If you like rye bread, you're going to love what Village Hearth is baking now. Our three special rye recipes are the perfect start to deli favorites, like a hot and cheesy Reuben or a grilled ham and cheese sandwich. Whether you prefer yours with caraway seeds or without, or even a darker pumpernickel rye, all are high fructose corn syrup free and satisfyingly delicious. Bring out the flavor of all your sandwich favorites with Village Hearth rye breads, the perfect answer to what's for lunch. Village Hearth, baking our best for you.
Pride.
Left corner three on the way. Got it.
Excellence.
Yes, it counts. And a foul.
Commitment.
Drops the hammer. Thank you and good night.
For Badgers, they're not just words. They're words to live by.
It's over. Let's have a party, Badger Nation.
This is your radio home for the Badgers.
Catch all the Badgers men's basketball action in the Big Ten this year right here on WFHR, locally grown radio, your home for Wisconsin sports.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more.
I learned patience from my adoptive dad. All he had to say was,
"Hey, you got this. Just breathe." Hey, we're pretty good.
Yeah.
Might have to start a band.
I got it.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
From the home of the Cranberry Blossom Festival, your news talk and sports station is locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM.
40 AM, New Berlin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinair, and we are talking to two Wisconsin team members of Democrats Abroad, Annie Grawl and Liz Blackborn. And we are talking about some of the hurdles it takes for people who you don't necessarily think about the hurdles they have to go through, but people who are can legally vote and still want to vote in Wisconsin elections, in federal U.S. elections, presidential elections. But sometimes there's some barriers to do that. And so as far as what you would like people still living at home to know, or what the ways that they could help, because actually, before I ask that question, what is the rough estimate, at least people that you all work with the Wisconsin team, or even the numbers as far as people? Because I think on the website it said 9 million people living abroad that want to, that are trying to vote. Or what are some of the numbers that you, that we should be aware of?
Yeah, this is tough because there isn't really any official number. So we, you know, you see a lot of different numbers bouncing around. There's a government publication that's called the Election Administration and Voting Survey for 2020. And in that year, they said that there were 1.4 million military, plus 600,000 spouses and adult children, plus 2.9 million other citizens living abroad who could vote in that election. So, you know, some of those larger numbers probably also include people who are too young to vote. Mm-hmm. But those would be people of voting age. And so of those people, 1.2 million requested their overseas ballot using the UOQAVA procedure, which is the correct procedure that we're supposed to use. And of those, less than 1 million were actually returned in time and counted. So there's a big gap there still.
Yeah.
And the main reason that ballots are rejected is because they don't make it back in time, which is going back to what Liz was talking about before, about the challenges of getting our ballots returned in time. But, you know, one thing I really want to stress is that even though it's hard for us to vote, it's really important for us to vote, because we are U.S. citizens and we carry U.S. passports and we travel through the world as Americans. And we also have to file taxes, even though we live in other countries. We have responsibilities as Americans. So we also have the right, and the right to vote is the most important right that we have.
Absolutely. I mean, I think I was just making a joke the other day as far as, because we vote a lot in Wisconsin. I mean, we have primaries, we have nonpartisan primaries, and then generals, we have partisan primaries and then generals. And so as someone who is also in the get out the vote game, it's like every 6 months. And so it's to do that with the added, everyone's remote, everyone lives in different countries, there's different rules for everyone. But I think before we talk about what people at home can do, what is, granted, it may not happen, but what would solve that major problem of ballots getting back in time? In both of your views?
Electronic returns would help a lot.
Yeah.
So there are 50 states that are covered by the UOCAVA legislation. 30 of those states now have electronic returns. All 50 send the ballots out by email, but only 30 of the states allow the ballots to be returned electronically. The other 20, of which Wisconsin is one, require mail return. So that would be the most important way of getting our ballots back in time.
It seems so easy. We have the technology.
It's just a silly stumbling block. You can send them out one way and that's perfectly fine, but you can't send them back that way because God only knows what's going to happen.
Yeah.
All right. So then I guess for people who are listening to this, who would like to help in one way or another, what could they do? What should they know?
Go ahead, Liz.
Yeah. So right now we've got tons of people around the world who are working abroad temporarily or whatever, who have children abroad, who are studying, living, whatever, who are retired abroad. We need them to know to go to vote from abroad. So they register. Wisconsin, you have to register and request your ballot every year. You might still be on the voter rolls, but if you don't request that ballot, you don't hit that deadline, as you know, is March 15th. You don't get that ballot. Mm-hmm. That's a big one. And this election is particularly important because it's a state and local election. You don't get a 45-day ballot in advance. So we have to tell voters to fill out a federal write-in ballot. We call it the FWAB or the FWAB, depending on where you're from. And it is ridiculous. You have to go through. It's a blank ballot. It's actually very helpful. But we've got to tell Sconnies what's on their ballot to begin with. If you're in District 8, did you know you have that extra election? Do you know if you have a school board election? Did you see those ridiculous last minute allowed motions that are going to be voted on in different counties and cities? Yeah, mm-hmm. Both of them. Shaking your head. It's ridiculous. So we got to tell people what's out there. And we've got some great resources on our website, democratsabroad.org/WI-USA. We got all you need for 2023, including that FWAB guide. We also have a guide about your envelopes, because not only can you and your spouse or your kids not put your ballots in the same envelope to return it, you got to use more than one. You have to have a secure envelope with your information inside. And then you have to have an envelope outside of that envelope. I mean, signatures
and a witness.
And witnesses. And oh my goodness, there's a lot. You got to go to our website. You got to go to Vote From Abroad and get everyone to fill out an FWAP today.
Or just
that
fly.
That is our big goal.
Or just fly or just home for Pete's sake.
That sounds easier.
Pain in the neck.
All right. Well, we will connect. Feel free. I think I have everything, but feel free to follow up with me and send me all the information you would like for us to link to our show notes for today's episode, because this is super important. Like you said, friends who are living abroad, students who are studying abroad, people who you know would still want to vote. Let's get them, because we're running out of time. Like we said, we only got 4 weeks. So let's get that information out. Liz Blackburn, Annie Grawl, thank you so much for spending time with us today. This was super informative.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for keeping up the fight.
All right, Liz, go get some sleep. It's 2 a.m. there. All right, when we come back, Scott Gerard and Jesse O'Poyan will join us to talk about school funding. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
It'll all be all right. I'll be home tonight.
News talk and sports on both sides of the dial from Wisconsin Rapids and beyond. Locally grown radio 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
And we're live here outside the Perez family home just waiting for the... And there they go. Almost on time this morning. Mom is coming out the front door strong with a double arm kid carry. Looks like Dad has the bags. Daughter is bringing up the rear. Oh, but the diaper bag wasn't closed. Diapers and toys are everywhere. Ooh, but Mom has just nailed the perfect car seat buckle for the toddler. And now the eldest daughter, who looks to be about 9 or 10, has secured herself in the booster seat. Dad zips the bag closed, and they're off. Ah, but looks like Mom doesn't realize her coffee cup is still on the roof of the car. And there it goes. Oh, that's a shame. That mug was a fam favorite.
Don't sweat the small stuff. Just nail the big stuff, like making sure your kids are buckled correctly in the right seat for their age and size. Learn more at nhtsa.gov/the right seat.
Visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat.
Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
If you came across someone struggling with hunger, how would you recognize them? By their clothes? Their age? The way they speak? Would you notice an 8-year-old girl who's not excited for summer break
because she may not be having lunch again until September?
Or a single father of two who works three
part-time jobs and still can't put enough food on the table?
Or maybe a mother who cleans offices at night,
hoping to find meeting leftovers to take home to her hungry family?
Or a war veteran who's having a hard time
landing a job and getting back on his feet?
I am the 1 in 8 Americans who struggle with hunger. People you pass by every day but never knew were hungry. I am hunger in America.
Hunger can be hard to recognize. Learn why at IamHungerInAmerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America, 200 Food Banks Strong, and the Ad Council.
Childhood should be the happiest time of life. But for many children living in poverty with blindness, facial deformities, and other crippling conditions, it's riddled with pain, rejection, shame, and isolation. At Mercy Ships, we're answering the cries of some of the world's most forgotten children and adults through free, life-changing surgeries, surgeries that turn despair into hope. These once heartbroken boys and girls, and many men and women too, are now restored, accepted, and on their way to a life of opportunity and joy. No one can change the world on their own, but together we can transform it by restoring hope to one person, one child at a time. Volunteers from your community and around the globe are bringing life-changing healing and hope to the forgotten poor. To learn how you too can help change the world, one child at a time, go to mercyships.org today.
From the Civic Media News Desk, I'm Melissa Kay. Here's what you need to know. Kids and parents gathered at the Central Wisconsin Cultural Center in Wisconsin Rapids for the Paint with the Police event. Wood County Sheriff's Department officers painted with the kids in full uniform and had live musical entertainment. These young kids were able to interact with officers and get to know them as real people who serve and protect our city. The race for Wisconsin Supreme Court is already the most expensive in U.S. history, at close to $19 million and counting. That includes the money raised by the campaigns themselves and outside groups.
It's the world that we live in, quite frankly. Ever since the Citizens United case, you know, was decided by the United States Supreme Court, you know, outside money can come into these races.
That's Janet Protasewicz, recently on Capital City Sunday. Her opponent, Dan Kelly, says money gets the candidate's message out. In sports, the Badgers beat Minnesota last night. The Bucks beat Washington. I'm Melissa Kay for Civic Media News.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Chance for mixed precipitation changing to all snow this afternoon, otherwise cloudy. Highs level off around 36, winds out of the northeast 8 to 15 miles per hour. Overcast skies again tonight, chance of snow showers, lows dip down to about 23. Partly cloudy tomorrow, highs around 40. A dusting of snow today. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 33.
The teacher tells you stop your playing, get on with your work. And be like Johnny Too Good. Don't you know he never shirks? He's coming along.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matnair.
It's a classic.
It is a classic, but it's
super.
It's
super tramp.
Such a cryptic start.
Super tramp. It's cool.
It is cool. It is cool, Jane. All right. Well, if you can guess on what the Easter egg is with that song, we are going to be talking about school funding, which hangs in the balance of the Wisconsin budget debate. And here to talk about it are Scott Gerard, who is a K-12 education reporter for the Cap Times, and Jesse O'Poyan, who is the Capitol Bureau Chief, because they wrote, it's been a month already, but they wrote an exhaustive piece that I found to be very informative as someone who hasn't lived here for the, I mean, this is longer than the last 15 years, but the article starts with a quote from 2005 when then Deputy Superintendent said to state leaders he's been trying to find the promised land in school finance for at least 3 decades. And that deputy superintendent at the time was Tony Evers. And so this is a conversation as far as our schools, what types of schools, funding, how we fund them, that has been going on for a very long time. And right now we have an opportunity, potentially, with Governor Evers' budget to add $2 billion to the budget. If we get there, we will see. But I'm so excited to have you both here to kind of talk through what is sometimes a very nuanced, winding road of how we even got here in the first place.
Yeah, thanks for having us. We're glad to be here. It is a long and winding road for sure.
I mean, because for both of you, this is probably, what were both of you doing in 2005? Not working for the Cap Times, I'm imagining.
Well, obviously. Yeah. I guess that was my freshman or sophomore year of high school.
I was, I believe, a freshman and sophomore at La Follette High School here in Madison.
There you go. So we're all public school kids from Wisconsin?
Yep.
There you go. So I guess let's talk about it from that point of view then. Like, there is a lot of reasons why we got to where we are now, which is, I think it's, depending on who you ask, we're underfunding the schools, at least in the way that it is not kept up with inflation. And so what kind of, and either, both of you can take a stab at this, but like, how would you categorize the major milestones of how we got to where we are today?
Scott, I'll let you take that.
All right. Yeah. So back in the early 1990s is probably the most important milestone, which is when revenue caps were implemented. And at the time, Governor Tommy Thompson talked about, you know, what he considered skyrocketing property taxes and wanting to rein those in. And so revenue caps were an approach to do that. And what they did was basically set a maximum amount that school districts, one source said they're called revenue caps, they're really spending caps. Mm-hmm. Revenue caps is a confusing term. But really they govern how much money school districts can spend, mostly through the combination of state aid and local property taxes. And so that was a whole new system. A couple years into that, they were tied to inflation. So annually, the revenue cap would increase by whatever the consumer price index was. And so that sort of gave school districts a way to plan. You know, they knew there was a set number that they knew their budget would increase by. Then in just before 2010, and actually just before sort of Act 10, which is obviously its own major barometer in the education world here in Wisconsin, but just before that, actually, under Governor Jim Doyle during the recession, they untied it from the rate of inflation. And so that meant that every 2 years with this biennial budget process that the state is doing right now, legislators decided how much to increase revenue caps or to not increase them if they chose not to. And so that has that to me is probably the most significant milestone for where we're at today, because it created a system where every 2 years schools aren't certain what sort of money they'll be able to spend, not only what state aid they'll receive and how that'll balance with property taxes, but literally how much they're going to be able to spend. And so that to me was probably the most significant change. And then obviously Act 10 happened and some cuts in school budgets and things like that.
And I think what stood out to me in the report, in the article you guys published, is with the not tying with inflation and the having to adjust and plan and know that it could change every 2 years and the disruption that can create for schools and school boards in their long-term planning becomes the guessing game that can, you know, affect innovation and, like I said, long-term planning. And so with that, and then there's also then the part of this that also the school voucher thing came into play during this as well. And so I don't know, Jesse, if you want to touch on that as far as how much do you feel like the voucher thing is something separate or can't be, it's still inextricably tied with like the funding issues that we're dealing with?
Yeah, I mean, there's a really big push and pull dynamic, I think. And vouchers weren't always a strict partisan issue. You definitely, I think, in years past, had a lot more Democrats, particularly in the Milwaukee area, who are more supportive of those programs. But, you know, like a lot of issues over time, it's become, for the most part, a pretty partisan issue, at least if you look at it within the state legislature. You know, like other issues, probably less partisan throughout the state. But if we're looking at lawmakers, it's become a thing where Republicans are generally more supportive of expanding the voucher program, and Democrats are generally of the mindset that any expansion of that program leads to, you know, diminished services, diminished support for the public school system throughout the state. And so, you know, when it comes into budget debates like the current one, you're going to see that play out. And one of the early kind of starting points that that was laid down as a potential negotiation point was Republican leaders saying, well, you know, maybe Tony Evers, Democratic governor, wants more public school funding, and maybe, you know, we can get more expansion of vouchers as a sort of trade-off. And that's still at play. You know, the ultimate end goal for a lot of Republicans is to have a universal expansion of that that program, which is just not going to happen with a Democrat as governor. But the dynamic is still at play, because you will see some efforts to expand it with Republicans in charge of the legislature.
And I'm still trying to wrap my head around, what is the argument as to why that improves schools? Because I know, I forgot exactly who you quoted in the article, but especially in comparison, we started off today's show talking about the suite of bills that are going to go through Florida, one of being universal school choice. And to a certain extent, I understand, well, kind of, the school choice that's happening in Florida, because it's a growing state, whereas Wisconsin is not, especially certain parts of Wisconsin is not. And so what is the outcome that the argument for people who are very pro school voucher that they think will be accomplished by doing this? Is it that all schools will get better?
Yeah, I mean, I'll let Scott speak to this probably in more detail, but yeah, it's the innovation argument, right? It's the marketplace argument, which exists not just in schools, but, you know, that's the argument here, is that if a private school can do it better, then A, students should have the right to go to that school. Parents should be able to choose the school that's best, you know, for their child in their mind. But also that if you start seeing more students going to those schools, public schools will be forced to improve themselves to be able to compete.
Yeah, it's very much a market-based argument that competition breeds innovation and improvement, and that the best will win out. And that if public schools want enrollment and students, then they need to do better, is the argument. And but what you mentioned about enrollment in Florida versus Wisconsin, I believe it was a quote from Mike Berry, who is the head of the state School Budget Administrators Association and a former Madison budget administrator and other school districts. And he talked about how with declining enrollment, the additional challenges that can create in expanding choice. Right. So you have fewer and fewer students. The pie of students is getting smaller, while the options, the pie tin for them to fill, keeps expanding, and the problems that can create. And so it is a pretty unique situation right now, I would say, given that balance.
We're talking to Scott Girard and Jesse Apoyan. Jesse Apoyan, who is the Capital Bureau Chief for the Cap Times, and Scott Girard, who is the Cap Times K-12 education reporter, about their article that I highly recommend reading if you're trying to wrap your head around school funding, what the negotiating chips are for the Wisconsin's budget negotiations that are happening right now. It's in the Cap Times. It was published February 1st, and I'll put it in today's show notes. But I guess coming back to more schools, more competition, and there is an argument, I, you know, fundamentally, there's a part of me that understands the argument for that. But I think one of the things that I hadn't thought about that stuck out to me in the article is just the nature of fixed costs for any functioning school. That, like, a bus costs the same whether it's 60 kids or 70 kids. And that a decline of 100 kids across one elementary school maybe is 5 kids per class, which is not enough of a decline to not have that extra teacher. So you still need to pay for that teacher. And so the per pupil funding model, while maybe seems fair, doesn't necessarily understand the fixed cost. And even on top of that, the fact that how much more schools are supposed to be doing. on top of what they maybe when we were all in school were doing when it comes to mental health and feeding kids and a lot of different things that we're relying on teachers and schools to now do. And so I guess, is that from the conservatives or the Republicans you've talked to, is there an understanding of that reality?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a general understanding, I think, you know, pretty much across the board that is a thing that is true and that is also a really difficult thing to adjust. You know, there's a reason why the school funding formula is hard for us to explain. You know, it's hard for legislators to explain too, and it's hard for them to figure out a better way to do it. You know, going back to that opening quote from Tony Evers, you know, trying to find that magic solution, and it's hard to reach it. So there's absolutely an acknowledgement, I think, that, you know, those fixed costs exist and that's a challenge. There's also an acknowledgement that, you know, not having funding increases tied to inflation has created problems, but also that convincing anyone to start tying something to inflation after it hasn't been tied to inflation for a long time is a pretty big ask. I mean, we see that in the transportation funding debate too. You know, the gas tax, increases could be indexed to inflation, but they're not. It's hard to convince people to do that. So I think there's a general agreement in some of these existing problems, and you know, individual legislators hear from the teachers, the administrators, the school boards in their districts about these challenges. And the reality is also that, you know, those challenges are very different in different parts of the state. And so, you know, one legislator is hearing something about, you know, sparsity aid and hearing something about, you know, low enrollment districts, and other legislators are hearing about these, you know, giant urban centers that are having different challenges. So, you know, that's a long roundabout way of saying, yes, everyone's aware of these baseline problems and I think they're hearing a lot about them, but figuring out how to solve them is a whole other ballgame.
All right. Well, when we come back from the next break, I want to talk more about is more money the solution versus other reforms that are on the table and how much we can try to summarize that in 8 minutes. But our guests are Scott Girard, who is the Cap Times K-12 education reporter, and Jesse Opoyan, who's the Capitol Bureau chief, both for the Cap Times. Stick with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Got a heart that's strong and a love that's tall. Ain't got no name, ain't got no fancy education, but I can see right through a powdered face on a painted fool. Let me slip through. Why you tryna hold me back? I'm just tryna move up front, little more this, little less of that.
Can you feel me?
Let me come through.
Let me come through.
I'm tired of being in the back.
What's your favorite thing about a good movie? What makes the perfect song? And what's it about the first lines of a book that will snatch our attention? If these questions intrigued your artsy interest, you don't want to miss Director's Cut on WFHR every Sunday night from 8 to 9. Your WFHR program director James and head of production Seth will be diving into the local arts and entertainment, hot topic movies, hidden gems, and more. Audience feedback and requests are encouraged for this fun and open conversation about art in all its forms. It's art supporting artists in their own words.
You came across someone struggling with hunger. How would you recognize them? Would you notice a 16-year-old boy who got his first job,
not for extra spending money, but to help feed his little sisters?
Or a mother who's in between jobs and sometimes goes to bed hungry so her kids can have dinner? I am the one in eight Americans who struggle with hunger. I am hunger in America.
Hunger can be hard to recognize. Learn why at IamHungerInAmerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Look through your children's eyes to see the true magic of a forest. It's a storybook world for them. You look and see a tree. They see the wrinkled face of a wizard with arms outstretched to the sky. They see treasure in pebbles. They see a windy path that could lead to adventure. And they see you, their fearless guide through this fascinating world.
Find a forest near you and start exploring at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
You are listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Thank you. But did you know we are always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app too? And if you miss a show or game, find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, civicmedia.us.
When I was younger, I may have did some stupid things, even committed some crimes. But I'm not a criminal.
Youth Advocate Programs is a community-based alternative to youth incarceration, congregate placement, and neighborhood violence. Learn how at yapinc.org.
Your place for this area's news, talk, and sports. We are Locally Grown Radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM.
From Butler to Windlake, always streaming at waukradio.com.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinair, and we are talking to Scott Girard, who is CapTimes K-12 education reporter, and Jesse Opoyan, who is the CapTimes Capital Bureau chief, about their article, which I highly recommend going back and reading, School Funding Hangs in the Balance of Wisconsin Budget Debate. And I think what I understand the crux of this to be is that Governor Evers, other Democrats, public school advocates, basically argued that there needs to be more money and that we have underfunded schools. And Republicans, conservatives, maybe school voucher people have said, basically, we're already spending so much money and we're not seeing results. And so we need more reform. We need more reform on how we're doing math or reading and stuff like that. And so it feels to me like someone who does not have kids, and so I am still learning about this all the time, that it's a chicken or the egg, like false equivalency type thing of how can you say that more money wouldn't help when the people who were working in education say we need more money, but vice versa, how do you make sure that what they spend their money on is working? And so I don't even have a question there. I'll let you just say more about that juxtaposition.
Yeah, and this is something, I mean, this is what the entire debate over school funding is about, so yeah. We could talk for hours about this. You have one side, public school advocates, Democrats, talking about what they consider perpetual underfunding, and so the results that the other side uses to explain why they don't believe more money should be thrown at the problem, they say, well, those results are the result of underfunding, so of course, mm-hmm. The results are bad. But then the figures that we do spend on education, it is the largest part of the state's budget, are very large, you know, and whether that's large enough or not, they are just very large. And so looking at the budget, it is a big number. And so from the other side of the aisle, you have folks saying, well, look at this, the biggest part of our state budget, and it's not producing results. Why would we throw more into this? And so I don't know how you get it's sort of the sides arguing past each other on those points, right? I think no one agrees that like the results are great.
Yeah. Right. That's fact, right? That like we, yeah. From where we started, when we said we're all public school kids from Wisconsin. And when we were in school, Wisconsin schools were ranked a little bit higher, if not a lot higher, than they are currently.
Yeah. And frankly, especially for certain demographics, white students, schools have been better for, and the achievement gaps in the state, and you can point to a lot of those things as examples of schools not working right now for a lot of students here. What the solution is to that is where the problem and the debate gets to, and it's complicated because the numbers are so big, because the system that funds it is so ingrained for three decades now, and is so complex. Jesse spoke to this earlier, but there's so many different pieces of this. So there is like normal state aid. There's also categorical state aid, which goes outside of revenue limits. There's also special education reimbursement. There's also rural transportation aid. Like there's all these different pieces of it. And so where you look to try to change on a systematic level, whether that's cutting funding or, reallocating funding in what could be considered a more efficient way, or just adding funding, Where do you add it? Where do you reallocate it from or to? So it's even once you get past that first, like, well, do I think there should be more or less? Mm-hmm. It's okay. Well, now which of this huge long list do we take from?
So I guess as we, yeah, at least it's not boring, right?
I will say there was a Blue Ribbon Commission that met on K-12 funding issues, and they came out with the report. I think it was in early 2019. They filed their long list of recommendations, many of which have not been acted on. And so a lot of advocates, and that was a bipartisan commission, included Republicans and Democrats. They did come up with a lot of recommendations that pointed to some of these issues. A lot of them have not been considered by the legislature at this point for a variety of reasons. So a lot of advocates will point to those recommendations and say, yes, it's really complicated. Here's a place to start. And we haven't yet.
We haven't done that part yet. Well, would you send me that blueprint? I'd love to put it in today's show notes and look at it. So then I guess coming back to the problem is the problem no matter what. But at least the problem in front of us is that we're going to have a budget. It's going to happen this year. So, Jesse, at least to wrap up this conversation, what do you think are the most likely negotiating chips from each side to get to something that hopefully, knock on wood, is a compromise that no one loves but people can live with?
Yeah, I mean, Tony Evers, the governor, has proposed $2.6 billion, and I can just about guarantee Republicans are not going to approve $2.6 billion.
That's a bet I'd be willing to take, and I don't bet often.
I'm gonna go with that. That being said, you know, they have said they want to spend a significant amount of money. The question is just what does significant mean to them? But, you know, rather than, I think, talking bargaining chips, I'm just going to say that the issues that I think that we're going to find the quickest agreement on are going to be increases to special education funding and increases to mental health programming. Again, will it look exactly like what the governor proposed in his budget? Probably not. Is that the easiest starting point in terms of agreement and immediacy of the problem? I think probably most people involved in the conversation would agree on that.
Well, that's good to hear as far as, because you said that in the article was basically the part of the mental health thing was not this is a more recent responsibility or at least starting place that people are seeing and necessary as we see these reports come out as far as how our teenagers and especially how our teenage girls are doing. But it is a whole new world as far as how schools are equipped to be able to deal with mental health. And so the fact that there could be some agreement on that, great. That is a relief. Let's hope. All right. Jesse Opoyan, Scott Girard, thank you so much for spending time with us today. I will link both that blueprint and your guys' article to today's show notes so people can go check that out. But thank you so much for your time and your work.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
All right. Well, that about does it for the noon hour. Thank you for listening. When we come back, what do you think of bare minimum Mondays? What are they? Do you think you could pull it off at your job? How much is Jane going to roll her eyes when I tell her what it is? Stick around. We will talk about it when we're back. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Let's get the story. Now when the radical preach come to get me released, me is all on the cover and was weak. And I'm on my way. I don't know where I'm going. I'm on my way. I'm taking my time, but I don't know where. The queen of Corona. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day-Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I think the advice I would give is you don't need to know all the answers. the craziest thing was believing that your dad knew everything. So as a dad, you felt like you had to know everything. You had to get everything right. It's okay to make mistakes. As long as it's coming from love, then, you know, it kind of starts to work itself out. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at